Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Been in business and I've been in love. Used to fly high like a turtle dove. Had the blues many a time. Just a woman on a poor man's mind.
From newsounds.org, it's time for another remote edition of Soundcheck, our live performance and interview series. I'm John Schaefer. When you grow up with a parent who's a famous musician, no one's going to be too surprised when you grow up to be a musician too. But when that parent is the songwriter and guitarist Ry Cooder, you might find yourself following some surprising musical paths. That is certainly the case with Joaquim Cooder, whom we first heard as a percussionist working on his dad's music, but who now has a burgeoning career of his own. His latest album is called Over That Road I'm Bound, and it is full of inventive arrangements of songs by Uncle Dave Makin, an early 20th century songster. And it features Joaquim's favorite instrument these days, the electric mbira. Don't worry, we'll get Joaquim to explain what that is in a few minutes. First, he and his dad have come up with some duo arrangements for us, complete with electronic effects and live looping, of some of the songs from the new album. So here are Joaquim and Ry Cooder playing Molly Married a Traveling Man live at home in California.
Remember, Molly's married a traveling man.
sweet papa, where you been so long? Papa, where you been so long?
That's called Molly Married a Travelin' Man, live performance at home in California from Joaquim Cooter and his dad, Rye Cooter, in a special performance for us today. That song also appears on Joaquim's new album called Over That Road, I'm Bound. And Joaquim, it's great to have you with us. This album has been like one of the surprises of the year to me.
My goodness, thank you so much.
Surprising not only for what it is, but for what it does with what it is. So right. These are all songs by Uncle Dave Makin. How did you discover this guy? I mean, he was big literally almost 100 years ago. How did you discover his stuff?
Well, I discovered it when I was probably 5 years old, not realizing at the time I was discovering Uncle Dave, but I just would hear my dad playing banjo music around the house. He loves to sit in his chair and play the banjo. And he would just kind of cycle through songs as they would come into his head. And a couple of the ones that really stuck with me were these Uncle Dave tunes. The first one that I remember was, it's called Morning Blues. And you know, I grew up, years went by, decades really. And I have a daughter and a son of my own now. And she's 5 and a half. But at the time she was probably 3. I would take her, it was probably before he was born. I would take her to visit my parents and my dad sitting in his chair playing the banjo again. And, or maybe he's been sitting in his chair the entire time. It's just that I wasn't there. But and I was in the other room and I heard this song and I yell, "What is that?" And he said, "Morning Blues, Uncle Dave Makin." And I could just, it kind of just came back to me. And I walked in and my daughter's just sitting there listening to him play. And I went and grabbed my imbira, which is how I've played this whole, it's how I basically do everything. It's this. And you know, I'll talk about that in a sec, but
yeah,
I just started playing along with him and seeing how, for some reason, it just, there was something about the song on the imbira felt like this outdoorsy, serene, I don't know, just this thing when you kind of slow it down and take it outside of like a hard driving banjo mentality, it kind of gets into this other zone. And it started like that, me playing it around the house and learning more songs. And my also a big part of it was that my daughter became obsessed with Uncle Dave Makin. I mean, it was every day. we went through this whole thing. Every morning, the two of us would go into the living room or into the dining room and she would sit down. And I would have to put on a certain Uncle Dave song before she would even touch her breakfast. It was this, it just became this like, this like kooky scene that we had going.
I just love that there's three generations of Cooters all like, you know, whose lives revolve around this guy that, you know, who passed away in the 1950s.
I know.
Crazy.
Just, yeah.
Well, one of the surprises is, and you've already alluded to it, is that the instrument that you play takes this music totally out of the, I mean, because Uncle Dave is sort of a transitional figure, like from vaudeville to
completely
pop slash country music of the 1920s.
Exactly.
But when you play it, it could be from anywhere at any time. And of course, you're playing it on an instrument whose roots are in Southeast Africa,
right,
in what is now Zimbabwe. Although the instrument that you are holding looks nothing like a traditional mbira.
Right. I have it here.
It actually looks like, the stuff they put on like ledges of buildings to keep the pigeons from roosting there.
You're right. That is a good.
It looks like you got all these things that look like big nails sticking up. What's going on here?
Well, the instrument builder, Bill Wesley, who created this thing, I think if I'm not mistaken, he started off by walking around the street and collecting the little tines that would fall off of street sweepers. You know, like those little metal things that would spin around.
Yeah.
And then he would bend them and then tune them, and they go up in fifths. So it's not chromatic.
Yeah.
And that's the key, I think, because there's no right or wrong. It's kind of like these, in chromatic music, it's like this hierarchy and everything is right or wrong, basically. And in this, you find these clusters that speak to you, and I sort of hover in where I know I can sing over.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, whenever I start something on this mbira, it kind of puts me in this very trance-like state.
Well, you probably know that in traditional Shona mbira music, that whole trance thing is a big part of the spiritual practice that accompanies the playing of the instrument.
Completely. I mean, I think it's for me, it's more effective than any drug or anything, because once I start doing it, I realize a lot of time has just gone by. You know, I kind of go, it sometimes happens to me even live on stage, where I kind of, it's nice because it takes me away from being nervous or being like, oh, the audience is here, because I've just sort of taken myself out of the, I'm like, oh, yeah. I've just gone away.
So did you play the traditional mbira first?
You know, growing up, I had this little small thing, like a little kalimba thumb piano thing that I loved. And I played it all the time. And it just, I had an early prototype that he made, this guy, about 25 years ago, I found it. And so that I've been playing for a really long time. It wasn't until within the last 5 or so years that I realized he had made an electric version of it.
Mm.
And that enabled me to get up, plug it into an old guitar amp, and get this great sound and start singing. I had never done that before. I'd never sung or written my own songs before that.
Well, and an electric mbira, you know, once you have that plug, you can start using all the effects pedals that any electric guitarist would use. And
exactly.
And so on these songs, we get to hear this instrument sounding very un-mbira-like.
You know,
at times it sounds like a bell or, you know, a synthesizer or actually a series of bells.
Mm-hmm.
And the song that you and your dad are going to do next for us, called "Oh Lovin' Babe," this reminds me of some of Tom Waits's music.
Oh, nice. Especially
if you ever heard Tom Waits do his version of "Hi Ho, Hi Ho" from the Disney, from the late Hal Wilner's Disney album.
Yeah.
It's got this kind of chugging sound.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I love that.
Yeah. So tell me where this song comes from, "Oh Lovin' Babe."
Well, this is one of his more blues-inspired ones, because I think Uncle Dave went around collecting different kinds of music when vaudeville, medicine show, minstrel music, and blues music that would have been popular at the time. And O Love and Babe has that. And I end up singing My Babe, the Little Walter song, only because I keep thinking that's what I'm singing because it's so similar. So I keep going into My Babe. And then finally I said, you know what? I'm just going to sing a verse from My Babe just because I keep confusing the two anyways. And I think it's just, yeah, that was an example of him being influenced by, you know, blues music of the time.
Right. So we're talking maybe 1920s, something like that?
I think so, because by the time, he didn't become famous until he was in his 50s.
Right.
When he really, and he had repopularized all this older music for a whole new, you know, country music generation who didn't really know all that stuff. So yeah, it probably would have been the 20s. That's right.
Well, let's hear another live performance. The album is called Over That Road I'm Bound. It's songs by Uncle Dave Macon in Joaquim Cooter's arrangements built around this contraption, the electric mbira that he's holding. And his dad, Ry Cooter, helping out with guitars and backing vocals. Let's hear a version of Oh Lovin' Babe.
All right.
Sweetest gift in all of my
just a kiss from a pretty strange woman, my babe. True little baby, my babe. True little baby, my babe. True little baby, my babe.
That is Joaquin Cooter on electric mbira lead vocals, Rye Cooter on guitar and backing vocals, and a version of Oh Lovin' Babe, a song. We say it's a song, Joaquin, by Uncle Dave Macon. Did he write all of his own? He was more of a collector, right?
That's what I've gathered. I think he was a collector, and he would borrow lines from here and there that he would come across. Some songs probably he did write completely.
Yeah.
And then some songs are traditional, but then I think some songs are a mixture. And that's what always interests me, because I would hear, there's a one line on this one, I don't know which one it is now, but that really would always crack my daughter up. She would always laugh so hard. He says, my name is Uncle Dave. I'm from Tennessee. If you don't like my peaches, don't shake my tree. And then she just wanted to hear that over and over again. But my point is, that's a common line. Like, you've heard that in other songs.
And Steve Miller would later use it as well.
Yeah, exactly, right. So, you know, I think that's an example of him pulling from another kind of thing and using what he found here and there along the way.
But that's folk music, right? That's
exactly, I mean, exactly.
That's how it, you pull stuff from other songs as needed. And you, that's what you've done with these songs. Because these are not like slavish, you know, recreations of Uncle Dave Macon songs.
Yeah, I found, when I started rewriting his lyrics, it was more just for fun as a little project. Like, I would maybe tell a little story. Maybe I'll keep the first verse the way he sets it up, and then I'll kind of veer off on my own story. Like, over that road I'm bound. I still couldn't tell, is he telling a story about somebody who's about to be executed or somebody who's about to, but then I just said, you know what? I'm not going to mess with that. I'm just going to, it started making me think about all the places I would think about if I was going to die, what little moments of my life would pop into my head. And I just was like, I started thinking about a road in Northern California that I rode down on a bike that I rented one day, you know, heading towards the ocean. It just popped into me. It was an unremarkable day. It was a beautiful day, but it wasn't, you know, it's just, so I kind of just, I think also because you get meditative when you play the mbira and you just start to, your mind really just goes into these places.
Yeah. Let me come back to the mbira for a moment, because you know, we've talked already about the whole sort of trance aspect of the traditional mbira. The traditional instrument has a much smaller number of tines or keys than what you have there. How big a range do you have to work with on this instrument?
Well, the main thing is it goes down in let's see, 4 octaves. So,
wow.
And then it just now keeps going up.
I just want to point out to people that what you just played was all in one consecutive series. It's not like you were running up a keyboard or anything.
Exactly.
So the instrument is built a totally different way from the way most Western instruments are constructed.
Exactly. That's the whole thing, is that, and a big part of it is, which I love when you talk to Bill, the instrument maker, he gets into some interesting territory about having young kids play this at a really early age, and that they don't have to struggle,
right,
to be gratified by music, by playing an instrument. And so they can feel this really good, I just keep saying gratified, that they can feel gratified by an instrument right away. So there's no, they don't have to struggle to even make a pleasing sound in order to then play the instrument.
Right, right. Not like a violin where you're going to be squeaking and mm-hmm. everyone's going to hate you for a year before
exactly.
you can make it.
And so I have a couple of these, and if I know we're going to have a bunch of my daughter's friends over, I kind of just leave it out there and see. Sometimes one will stop and start playing it. Sometimes somebody just wants to kind of just do whatever, but some kids will kind of sit there and work it out. And I'm like, oh, look, see, she's already kind of getting the thing, and then they kind of just stay doing it. And I'm like, yes, one at a time.
Yeah. It's an unlikely instrument and sound world to bring to bear on this music, on this, you know, turn of the 20th century music. And yet somehow it works.
I think because the songs themselves are such good, they're so catchy and they stick in my head. And so when you play it on this, there's something that just, I think it's a testament to the songs themselves. Like you don't have to struggle to see inside them.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like some real obscure banjo guy where it's kind of, I don't know. They're pop songs, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they literally were the popular songs of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Sturdy construction. So stands up even to the most unexpected arrangements, which is exactly what you get on Joachim Cooter's album, the new one called Over That Road, I'm Bound, songs by Uncle Dave Makin. He was born in 1870, so he would have been, you know, 30 and well-established in his career at the turn of the century. But as you said, Joachim, he didn't really become famous until the 20s,
mm-hmm.
and started making records and stuff. Passed away in 1952. This next song that you guys are going to do, When the Train Comes Along, this goes back to what you were talking about before, right? Where it's like a lot of traditional stuff that gets mm-hmm. woven together here.
Yeah. This one, I totally changed the lyrics because his When the Train Comes Along was very boisterous and, you know, just a rollicking good time of a train song,
mm-hmm.
which is great. And we all love that. But a couple things. We were on the road. My dad and Roseanne Cash were playing the songs of Johnny Cash. And we were mm-hmm. doing, we would do a few shows a year. And Glenn Pacha, who's the piano player, he was on the tour as well. And at soundcheck, I'd always go up to him and I'd say, Glenn, just start playing something. And I would put my iPad up, and he kind of muted the piano strings with his hand, and we're in this big concert hall, so everything sounds great. Even though it wasn't mic'd, it just was ringing out, and he was muting it and kind of plucking at it. And I took that thing he did and turned it into this thing that felt like kind of like the train going like ka-chugging along, but in a very mournful way, in a very melancholy or lonesome way. And so I thought, we've heard so many train songs over the years, for forever, hundreds of years, everybody loves a train song. What would be the most modern train story of our time? And our family's nanny, who came from Guatemala, had just lost her son was traveling to, after 13 or 12 years of not seeing her, he was coming up on that big train that the migrants go on, the Bestia.
Yeah.
And he didn't make it. He got as far as Mexico when he died. And I thought, I mean, it was the most tragic thing, and it happens all the time. And I thought, that is like the modern train story of our time, is that train. Wow. And so I wanted to tell his story as just something to, you know, just to throw out there, because it was such a huge deal that everybody went through with her, and we sent her back to be with the rest of her. It was just such a monumental thing. And I just wanted to be that, that'll be the train story to end the record.
Wow. Well, you know, and as you say, unfortunately, this happens all the time. You know, it's not an isolated story. No.
All over the world, the migrant stories, you know.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So that recording of Glenn Pacha at playing the sort of muted piano strings, that's on the recorded, on the album version of this song?
That's on the album version of the song. So for your show, what I wanted to do was try and recreate that, but only using the Imbira.
All right. Let's hear this live performance from Joachim Cooter and Rai Cooter of the song called When the Train Comes Along.
Thank you. you at the station when the train comes along. Now I'm lying here where the sagebrush grows. Meet you at the station when the train comes along. He says, son, there's just some places that you cannot go. Gonna meet you at the station when the train comes along. When the train
When the Train Comes Along is the name of the song. It originally is from the songbook of Uncle Dave Macon, given a makeover by Joaquim Cooter, and a live performance at home in L.A. from Joaquim on vocals and the electric mbira, Rai Cooter playing the guitar and backing vocals. The album's called Over That Road I'm Bound, and Joaquim, you were mentioning before how the pianist Glenn Pacha was doing this muted piano thing, and that becomes part of the recorded version, the version that's on the album. The album also has a wonderful cast of characters, your dad, obviously, but also Sam Gandel,
yes,
who, you know, I know from his work with Sam Hamadon,
yep,
mostly as a sax player, but obviously he's a pretty good bass player too.
Absolutely.
And among others, Veer Farka Touré,
mm-hmm,
the guitarist.
Yes.
Which is wonderful in and of itself, but also for the fact that your dad and his dad made some amazing music together.
Yeah. And I think that record, the Talking Timbuktu record, was a very formative thing for me. I think that set me kind of on my path of loving Ali Farka Touré's music and desert blues and kind of seeing everything almost through that lens. And I think that's why the mbira so speaks to me. When there's a blues song playing this over it, I feel like I'm trying to kind of sneak into that tradition in my own little way. And so I've been waiting for the right time to get Via to play on something of mine. It just happened to work out for this one song. There was like, he had a day off. And so we booked studio time and just said, come in and just play a bunch of stuff. And that was how I was able to get him on the record.
Yeah. Was this before you were even making the record? You just...
This was before I was even making the record. I was kind of assembling.
Yeah.
I'm always like sort of getting ready for something that I'm not sure what it's going to be.
You're on the road with Roseanne and your dad, and you ask the pianist to play something. Veer Farka Touré comes through town. You ask him to play something. I mean,
you have to do that because you never know. First of all, you never know when you're ever going to see anybody ever again. I mean, I'm always, you know, like, and everybody's busy or they live in different, you know, Glenn lives in Nova Scotia. And I don't know. I just feel like a sound check is Also, the best stuff happens at sound checks.
Yeah.
And it's just a thing. And it's actually infuriating because...
Because there's no one there to hear it.
And then I'm always disappointed with my show, but I love my sound check, which is just so silly. It's like, but yeah, so I'm always like, let's just make the most of every, let's just do some stuff before we go eat or something.
So obviously this is an album that in bits and pieces, you've been assembling mm-hmm. like a musical magpie over the mm-hmm. course of a number of years.
Exactly.
The album's called Over That Road I'm Bound. As I said before, Joaquim, just one of the most pleasant surprises of a year that has been full of unpleasant surprises.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. That means so much to hear you say that. Thank you.
Well, thank you and your dad for playing for us. I love these versions that you've done.
I do, too. I was like, oh, my God, this should be a whole new thing. I guess it is.
Well, now it is.
Now it is.
All right, guys. Joaquim, thank you so much. And congratulations on the record.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much.
Backwaters up and the people are running. I'm going to mountains. I'm going hunting. Fare you well, oh, my little darling. Lord, Lord, ain't I gone.
Over That Road I'm Bound is the name of Joaquim's album. My thanks, of course, to both Joaquim and Rye for working up some kick-ass arrangements of these songs for us today. And thanks as well to our technical director, Irene Trudell, to our producer, Karen Havlick, and to you for joining us. I'm John Schaefer. Find our other live performances, watch videos, and much more at newsounds.org.
You love me, won't confess it. No, you don't know, my darling. No, Lord, ain't I gone. Children lying in the bed, the water was rising over their head. The mother was uptown, they never were found. Lord, Lord, wasn't that sad? Oh, how bad, oh, how bad. Oh, my love, lonesome road, oh, my love, lonesome wood.